Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Before there was a House vote to hold Attorney General Eric Holder in contempt of Congress, the first time in history that's happened, there was the Fast and Furious program, widely described as so-called gun walking, to track weapons as they made their way into the hands of Mexican drug cartels instead of taking those weapons off the street. But a new piece in Fortune magazine, the result of a six-month investigation, asserts that Fast and Furious was never about gun walking and never included it, and that the entire case built by the Senate Oversight and Reform Committee, which led to the contempt vote, was built on a misunderstanding, even though Attorney General Holder and other Democrats have admitted it. Catherine Aban says it didn't happen. She is an investigative journalist. Her new piece is called The Truth About the Fast and Furious Scandal. You can find a link to it on our website at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. This is a must read. Catherine, welcome to WNYC. Thank you for coming on with us.
Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure.
Let's start at the very beginning, just for a minute, and explain what gun walking is and how these guns are purchased.
Right. So let's start with the purchases. In Arizona, if you're 18 years old and you have no criminal record, you can go into a gun store and legally purchase 50 AK-47s and pay cash. The kids who are doing that are often suspected straw purchasers who have been recruited by the drug cartels to buy those guns.
Stop for a second. Did you say kids?
Kids, 18. Often not even old enough to buy beer, who are buying 50 AK-47s at a go, who are buying 50 caliber sniper rifles mounted on a tripod.
Nice. Go ahead.
So the problem for law enforcement is that even though those sales are certainly suspicious, under the law, they are legal. Okay, you are permitted to go and do that. So then the question is, how do you stop them?
And Arizona is ground zero for these purchases because the gun laws are so lax in that state, mostly as a result of NRA lobbying and their allies in the Republican Party, right?
That is correct. And in Maricopa County, which is the area around Phoenix, there are 853 licensed firearms dealers. The border to Mexico is 200 miles away, and in Mexico prohibits the commercial sale of firearms. So you can instantly see what the problem is. Basically, if the drug cartels want weapons, which they do, Phoenix is their gun supermarket.
So reading from your piece, a buyer who certified that the guns were for himself, then handed them off minutes later, hadn't necessarily lied, because he was free to change his mind. Again, nice. You continue. Even if a suspect bought 10 guns that were recovered days later at a Mexican crime scene, this didn't mean the initial purchase had been illegal. So thank you, NRA. And this is because they're allowed to change their mind minutes later, and therefore they didn't lie on their documentation to the gun dealer about what the purchase was about. That's that, right?
Well, this is a point of contention. So when you go buy a gun, you fill out a form called a 4473. You have to certify on that form that you are buying the guns for yourself. If you certify falsely that you're buying the guns for yourself, that's a felony. However, in Arizona, the prosecutors made the judgment call that because those kids were the rightful owners of those guns, even if they transferred the guns to someone else, those were legal transfers.
So
because they were free to change their mind. So then the question is, well, how do you stop them?
Now, this brings us back to the question of walking. The term gun walking, the walking and gun walking, supposedly means that U.S. agents allowed these guns to be passed up the chain of the Mexican drug cartels, even if they knew where some of them were, and they could have arrested lower down individuals who had these guns and potentially stop violence from taking place using these guns because they wanted to go for the higher-ups. That's what the gun walking is, correct?
Okay, so the definition of gun walking has been shifting throughout this entire investigation. The definition that I was working with in my article is if you're an ATF agent and you have the opportunity and the legal justification to seize guns and you choose not to, you have let those guns walk. You know,
now, again, stop for a second, because this is exactly what they have admitted to doing, that Eric Holder has basically apologized for, but that you're saying in the article basically didn't happen?
The issue is whether, in fact, they did have the legal opportunity to seize the guns. Now, Congress alleges that there was an operational tactic. It was the plan of the investigation to walk guns so that ATF agents could then track the weapons to the drug cartels and make big arrests. No one disputes that guns flowed to drug cartels in the Fast and Furious case, but the question is why?
There was an operation that was called Fast and Furious, correct?
That is right. And, you know, people say it's a program. It's not a program. It was an investigation of a group of suspected straw purchasers in Phoenix who were buying hundreds and ultimately thousands of guns.
So the scandal exploded when an agent named John Dodson went on CBS and said he had been pressured by his superiors to not arrest straw purchasers. Take a listen to part of that original interview. This starts with a question from reporter Cheryl Atkinson.
You were intentionally letting guns go to Mexico.
Yes, ma'am. I mean, the agency was.
Was Dodson lying? Because your article seems to indicate that that didn't happen, that they intentionally let guns go to Mexico.
Now, first of all, you know, I'm not here to attribute any motives to John Dodson. Was he lying or did he not understand? I mean, his group supervisor, Dave Voth, was having discussion with prosecutors, which was regularly discussed among the group, that they didn't have grounds to seize. That is well documented and supported by a lot of contemporaneous documentation. You know, Voth and his two case agents were struggling to find ways to seize guns. And what I think is compelling is that whenever they did have legal grounds as determined by prosecutors, they did seize guns. They actually seized lots of guns. And Phoenix Group 7 seized more guns than any other border group within ATF in that time period. So if your plan is to walk guns, why are you seizing so many? And if your plan is to walk guns, why are you working so hard to seize them? I mean, there are well-documented, elaborate operations within Fast and Furious where, for example, Voth had a GPS tracker designed that he put inside of an AK-47. They tracked those guns, and contrary to congressional testimony, as soon as those guns approached the border, they were seized because by law, you're not allowed to, it's a violation of export laws to allow the guns to flow across the border. So basically, when they had legal opportunities to seize guns, they did so.
Catherine Eban, investigative reporter, her article in Fortune magazine is about how the scandalous part of the so-called Fast and Furious scandal kind of never took place. But let me continue to push back based on what people have said. We played that one clip of John Dodson making his charge. The agent in charge of the operation wrote this in a memo in January of 2010. Quote, "Currently our strategy is to allow the transfer of firearms to continue to take place, albeit at a much slower pace, in order to further the investigation and allow for the identification of additional co-conspirators." Unquote. That sounds a lot like an admission of exactly what people think gun walking is.
Right, and that is exactly what Congress has said and has held up that document that you've cited. But the problem is this, which is prosecutors deemed that the transfers that he's referencing, straw purchaser transferring those guns to someone else, was legal. And what's very clear from the ATF rule book, it provides for this very situation where the rule book says, if you have legal grounds to seize the weapons, you seize them. But if you don't have legal grounds, then what you do is you monitor the transfers, basically until you have the legal grounds to seize them. And in fact, that is exactly what they did.
So when he says currently our strategy is to allow the transfer of firearms to continue to take place, why didn't he say we have no choice, our hands are tied?
Well, I don't think that you use that language in a briefing memo to supervisors. I mean, this memo is written after a meeting with prosecutors in which the prosecutors clearly state that they don't have legal grounds to make the seizures. So basically he is in the position of having to explain to his supervisors, all right, if we can't do plan A, what is plan B? And that is plan B, which is that they're going to monitor legal transfers and try to bring evidence to support a case against these guys. Now, the plan that they developed was to get a wiretap up in order to satisfy the legal concerns of prosecutors. So the evidence that they were seeking was direct evidence that would have tied the cartels to the straw purchasers, right? They wanted to intercept calls of the cartel recruiters directly giving the straw purchasers orders for guns. And that would have given them the evidence that they needed. And in fact, what is quite clear from ATF data is as soon as they went up on their most productive wiretap, that is when they made the most seizures. So clearly, you know, the strategy of going up on a wire to get that evidence, that's what they're seeking, and that is in fact what they did.
But here is another clip from the original CBS report from the whistleblower agent John Dodson describing dissent within the unit over this whole question. Again, it starts with reporter Cheryl Atkinson.
Did you feel that ATF was partly perhaps to blame for the escalating violence in Mexico and on the border?
Yes, ma'am. I even asked them if they could see the correlation between the two. The more that our guys buy, the more violence that we're having down there.
Senior agents, including Dodson, told us they confronted their supervisors over and over.
And what was the answer? What do they say?
If you're going to make an omelet, you got to scramble some eggs.
If you're going to make an omelet, you got to break some eggs. So there was dissent within the unit about the program, if his story is accurate, based on this very idea of whether they were deciding to allow the guns to walk.
Well, there is actually no documented dissent within the group specifically about gun walking, despite the claims of the whistleblowers. It isn't actually there. What there is a terrible firestorm of dissent over almost everything else. The schedule for working the wiretap, styles of leadership, claims from some of the agents allied with Dodson that they were being bossed around by a female case agent. But what is very curious is that the documentation that they point to as specifically suggesting an internal controversy over gun walking does not actually say that. And if you read the documentation closely, it says, and you add in the context of what was happening in the group, a very different picture emerges. So, for example, the famous schism email in which Dave Voth says there's a schism happening among the group and this is our chance to go up on a wire and get evidence. And, you know, if you don't like it, you can go get a job someplace else. And the whistleblowers have basically told Congress that they felt threatened because they were complaining about gun walking, and this is how they were being treated. But in fact, that email comes on the eve of going up on the wire. Dave Voth is facing a just flurry of criticism over the schedule for the wire. He finally gets fed up, and he puts out this memo. And, you know, what was striking to me about the reporting process here is that in each case, you know, when I spent 6 months reporting this, when I looked at what were the sort of central planks of the congressional case that guns were walked, the documents don't actually say that. I mean, they can be read to say that by inference, but they don't actually say that. And the needed context surrounding some of these documents, once that began to come into view, I saw a very different picture of what was happening in Phoenix Group 7.
And you're communicating that picture to our listeners. Listeners, if you want to read Catherine Eban's whole article, we have a link to it on our site. Go to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show. So when we come back from a break, I'm going to ask you, if this whole thing was based on a misunderstanding, why did Eric Holder go around apologizing for this program instead of telling Congress, no, you don't understand, this never actually happened? So we'll continue in a minute and hope to get an answer to that question. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Brian Lehrer on WNYC with investigative reporter Catherine Eban. Her explosive article in Fortune magazine is about why the Fast and Furious gun walking program never actually took place, at least the gun walking part of it, where allegedly agents from the United States allowed intentionally guns to go up the chain of the Mexican drug cartels. So this all begs the question, Catherine, if the program was never about gun walking and the problems were really about interpersonal office relations, why did the Obama administration admit it? Take a listen to Attorney General Eric Holder from February of this year.
That was a fundamentally flawed program, fundamentally flawed. And I think that I can actually agree with some of my harshest critics that, you know, there are legitimate issues that need to be explored with regard to the way in which Fast and Furious was carried out. But I think one thing that also has to be understood is that once this was brought to my attention, I stopped it.
So he's not saying this was an insignificant program and was never about gun walking anyway, which is what your article says. That sounds like an admission of wrongdoing. How come?
Well, first of all, let me say that, you know, I don't think anybody is saying, and my article certainly doesn't say, that everything the ATF agents did was right or that it was a perfect operation. I mean, that's really not the issue. And obviously, guns did reach Mexico. But the question I was looking at was there an operational tactic by the ATF to walk guns in this case?
Mm-hmm.
So what happened is the Justice Department issued a letter February 4th, 2011, it's become a sort of infamous letter, in which they said to Congress, ATF makes every effort to interdict guns, and gun walking did not occur in Fast and Furious. They subsequently retracted that letter.
And it's that letter around which the whole contempt of Congress charge has been made, because that letter has been described by members of Congress as a lie, a cover-up about what was really going on in Fast and Furious, and they were subpoenaing documents that are supposed to reveal who was responsible for that alleged lie and that alleged cover-up. You're saying the letter was accurate? The infamous February 4th letter was accurate?
Well, let me just say this, which is, no, I'm not saying that. Let me be clear, I'm not saying that. But you're correct that the retraction of the letter is part of what set this whole contempt proceeding against Eric Holder in motion, because it allowed Congress to say, yes, there was a cover-up. But the problem is that the letter was very poorly worded. It made a blanket assertion that guns are never walked by ATF. The full reasons for the retraction, I can't say. And I, you know, my reporting was really focused on what happened in Phoenix. What happened in Phoenix Group 7, you know, what went on with those agents, what really occurred in this investigation. So, but what's clear is that gun walking has occurred previously in ATF investigations, and the chief whistleblower, John Dodson, who brought down the House with his allegations that there was gun walking in Fast and Furious, actually embarked on a separate investigation in which he himself walked guns. And the guns that he walked and the way that he did it is actually sort of the most egregious textbook case of gun walking, in which he used taxpayer dollars, he procured the guns, he handed them over to a suspected trafficker, and then he went on vacation and didn't interdict the guns. And he himself has testified before Congress in pointing the finger at alleged gun walking in Fast and Furious, that if a single gun gets away from us, nobody gets to go home until we recover it, which clearly was not the case in his own investigation. And his own notes in case logs show that he left 2 days after handing over the guns and didn't interdict them. The letter that the Justice Department sent, ATF never walks guns, is incorrect. But why is it incorrect? How is it incorrect? And this is clearly a situation in which, all of the nuance and complexity of this situation has really been lost.
So why won't Holder release those documents? It sounds like, in a way, they could exonerate him.
Well, let me say, I don't know what's in those documents. And the documents that are now in question that Congress is seeking that led to the contempt vote are documents about internal DOJ deliberations over how to respond to the congressional inquiry. Again, I cannot say what was happening behind closed doors at the Justice Department. I mean, that was not the focus of my inquiry.
So last thing, if what you report is true, is there any way you see the administration walking back their apology and saying, you know what, Fast and Furious was never about this, it wasn't that big of a mistake, and the conversation we really should be having is about Arizona gun laws or United States gun laws? Here is a clip of New York Congresswoman Carolyn Maloney, who's also on that oversight committee with Daryl Issa, and something she said about this on our program last week.
Thousands of guns are going across the border, and people are dying. Why are AK-47s legal? Let's ban them. Let's ban straw purchases. Let's take some strong anti-gun control and control the guns at the border. That would get at the real issue, as opposed to the political Republican issue of going after the Attorney General of the United States.
So she's trying to refocus the conversation on gun laws and making it possible to go after straw purchases. Is that what you hope your article will do as well?
First of all, my goal for my article was and is to get to the bottom of what happened to Phoenix Group 7. You know, I am not a political reporter, but I will say this, that I think it would be incredibly difficult for the administration to walk this back at this point, because one of the reasons that I think it got so messed up in the first place is because they didn't want to have a discussion about gun control or guns or gun laws in the run-up to a presidential election. I think my guess would be that the calculation was it was political suicide to do that.
My guest has been Catherine Eban, investigative reporter. Her article, which is really paradigm-shifting about the so-called Fast and Furious gunwalking scandal, is in Fortune magazine, not Rolling Stone, not High Times. It's in Fortune magazine, and we have a link to it on our page at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehr Show. There are also some really interesting comments coming in about this on the comments page there. Go to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehr Show. Catherine Eban, thank you very much for coming on. I know this is a complicated story, and we gave you a bunch of time to lay it out, and you did it really well. Thank you very much.
Thanks for